Does driving matter to you? There are over 4 million miles of road in the U.S. to find out. That's a lot of ground to cover. A lot of highways, freeways, wrong ways, long ways. They're all there waiting to be driven on. So do you take that left turn at Albuquerque or just keep going? Do you wake up early Sunday mornings for a drive before the traffic does? Or do you take the long, winding road home for a change? If driving matters to you, just get out and drive. Why? Because driving matters. Mazda.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
Put your name on it. Just put your name on it. That's all I say. Be a man or a woman. Put your name on it.
Well, I'd like to hear about it, potheads.
How the fuck you gonna know how to be great if you don't study greatness? Look at the game tape.
Donuts. If
you
wanna battle, it's either
that you will or you won't. Hey, you know, you're not a bad looking man, Mr. Gals.
But you are, Blanche. You are in that chair.
There's something wrong with us. Something very, very wrong with us.
Hey, man.
This is the More Stories Podcast. You know that because you're here.
I'm Russell Brand. You have the More Stories Podcast. Are you real? Of course you know it's the More Stories Podcast. You're here. We're all one giant electron. All pieces pulled apart. And hopefully, if you're lucky, you meet a beautiful shagger girl and you make a beautiful white ribbon of a fibula across her breasts. Those breasts provide life. Beautiful milk flows from them breasts. But in the meantime, I want milk to flow from my phallus onto and top of them.
Jay Moore and Barry Katz sitting here. Best way. Say hi, Barry.
Hi, Barry.
Thank you, sir. That's it. More stories. Put your name on it. Dun, 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 dun.
Laugh in 1974.
Those are the days. Hey, my friends, the number one way you could support this podcast is by using the Amazon banner at my website, jaymoore.com. Please, if you're shopping at Amazon, there's no reason to go to Amazon. Go to my website. Put it up on your toolbar up there, jaymoore.com. And just anytime you're shopping on Amazon, tell your wife, tell your husband, tell your uncle, tell your aunts, tell your, you know what? Tell your aunts, tell your sister's ass. And then go to jaymoore.com, hit the Amazon banner. That's a fancy word for rectangle that says Amazon in it. And then that'll redirect you. Amazon just wants to know that you got there from here. And then email me what you bought, and I'll read it on this podcast and or my Jay Moore Sports Radio show. Now, this morning, it's summertime now. It's mid-June. I said to Barry Katz, I have no idea what we're talking about as we record this podcast. Barry Katz said to me,
I have every idea what we're talking about today.
Then I'm going to sit back, ease my seat back.
It's good to be here, Jay. I tell you, I love sitting across from you, and I want to tell you this with a, I have a lot of emotion today, because firstly, a lot of things happen to you in your life when you're in school and you talk about your kids a lot. There's no class in disappointment. There's no class in how to deal with adversity. There's no class on how to deal with tragedy. And so you go through school and you get into life and shit happens to you. And you have to wrestle within yourself and figure out how to do it. And I'm sure we've all heard this before. And I'm a firm believer in it. What makes you a great person is not how you deal with things when they're great. It's how you deal with things when they're not great. And so today, firstly, I want to say thank you for having me on, because
love having you on.
I think this is my 12th time on the show, and I always love telling people the story of how I first ended up on the podcast, because
Nick Swartzen canceled, I'm guessing. Seems to be a common theme on this podcast. That fuck. God, I love you, Nicholas, but Jesus. Cancel on Rich Eisen. Cancel on some, you know? Like, I'm your friend. I reach 1 million people. You know how many people would have watched his Comedy Central special? Like, how hard is it to just drive to the fucking west side, sit in a garage for an hour? I mean, you got to Bristol, Connecticut to be on Dan Patrick. That's on the Audience Network. What the fuck is the Audience Network? I don't know.
I'm going somewhere. You just take me.
Well, that's what Corey, you're about to pull this all off the table, Corey. Watch what you're doing and pay attention. You're all over the fucking ice on this one. What are you doing? You're doing. You're digging around.
She's like doing her shopping in
Holy
here,
shit,
all right?
She's coupon clipping.
I'm setting up your phone.
All right. Just make sure that it's recording. We're on fire here.
There are no backup systems here. You know, on the Super Bowl, there's 8 backup systems here.
It's also 11 on 11. This is one-on-one, baby.
That's right.
All right. So you, I want... You were saying why you're here and how you got here.
Yeah. So what happened, for those of you who don't know, is that Jay was putting together his podcast, and he had a vision for what the podcast was going to be, which was basically a celebrity-driven podcast where he interspersed his point of view into the conversation and also got the guests to go in a direction that they would have never gone before. And that's what it's all about, because if you can do that, that's why people want to listen. They don't want to listen to the same kind of questions. They want to listen to something that goes in a different direction that's unexpected. And so I'm all excited for him. He's starting the podcast, and about 48 hours before your first podcast, you called me and you said, listen, be in my garage 2 nights from now to do the podcast. And I said, Jay, I'm not the demographic for your podcast. This is yours. You know, you talked about how it was going to be this big thing and how you're going to have these celebrities on, these comedians and great actors and direct. And I'm not that guy. I've never done this before. I've never done a podcast before. You're like, be at my house in 2 days at 7 o'clock. I'm like, listen, Jay, I can't. I'm not the guy who's going to. You should really get somebody like Nick Swartzen. And you say, I said, be at my garage at 7 o'clock. I said, Jay, I can't. If I have to say this one more time, Barry, there's going to be trouble.
Like, I'm going to headbutt your face as the elevator doors open.
I said,
Richard Gere in Eternal Affairs to Andy Garcia. You know what they say about Latin fighters, Raymond? She loved it in the ass. Underrated. Andy Garcia.
The ass is underrated or the scene?
Andy Garcia, I don't like the butt stuff. I think it's dominance. It kind of grosses me out. I wouldn't want to be married to a woman that would allow it. It's total dominance.
What about the reverse?
Doing it to me? Nothing wrong with a finger here and there. Having a good time. Clean, you know, give the undercarriage a bit. The house your father. I'm Andy Garcia in Internal Affairs, and nobody knows that I am from Cuba until I get angry in the movie and then I start talking like this. We cannot have drinking in this household. Why do you sleep with him? I'm Andy Garcia. I talk like this the entire movie, and then when I get angry, all of a sudden you understand I'm from Cuba. A cubano.
So
there's going to be trouble if you don't show up.
Yeah, so I...
Wait, do you like butt stuff? Pawn that off on me.
I'm sorry. I will share with you.
We've had many discussions about this privately.
I think that whatever a woman wants in the privacy of her own car is...
But do you...
It's so nice to make you laugh once in a while.
You always make me laugh. With my wife, and then right after her is you and Jim Brewer. Jim Brewer's made me laugh more than anyone alive.
Unbelievable.
Can't get him on a podcast. Can't. He was just in town. Nothing.
Can't come to a garage in the Palisades.
Cats, I truly don't think people understand.
I'm so sorry.
How
I'm
well...
laughing so hard.
No, I love it. I don't think any comic understands or comprehends how much I speak about them positively. Like, whether it's Dane Cook. I tried to get Dane on, and he's like, oh, I heard things about what you... I'm like, do you ever listen to, like, do you understand, like, I've been in your corner defending you and saying how you inspired me at the Lab Factory? And, like, Brewer, like, I'm on record as, like, over and over, like, no one is... Like, Dane Cook goes on Marin. Like, yeah, Marin loves you, Dane. Marin spent 30 years of his life fucking sticking pins in a voodoo doll named Cook Dane. Cook, Dane.
Well, I think that's
all I can do is deal with what's in front of me, man. This is the team I got. And you know what? I was talking to Dave Koechner once, and I realized the comics that don't like me, Brewer doesn't not like me. Dane doesn't not like me. I'm just, you know, the very specific crew of guys that just fucking hate me for weird reasons, whatever.
I actually, believe it or not, I don't know the crew because I don't pay attention to it.
I'll tell you off. It's fucking tired. And I don't want to legitimize it and just give people
I don't
just gives people stuff to tweet like, what's up with so-and-so?
I never think about it either. That's why I can't tell you.
I think about the comics that do like me.
I'm crying, by the way.
Jim Jeffries. Bill Burr. You know what I mean?
Hacks.
Jim Brewer. I think Adam Carolla. I think about the comics, Dave Koechner, that would go to the wall for me. And I go, yeah, I'm okay. You four can fuck off. So you were
look. I'm just going to intersperse something.
How do we go from anal sex in the car?
We're going to figure that out in a second. But
right, bullet points. And the cleaning lady comes in. There's a post-it on my laptop that says "anal sex in car."
Isn't that the new Jerry Seinfeld show?
I can wrap it up. Yeah, anal sex in cars with comedians. Well done, buddy. You know I don't like anal sex because at some point, I'll make it real quick for you.
Yes.
It goes from sexual and like, ooh, wow, kind of perverse, which is great if you want to get your kink, to it to just complete, yeah, motherfucker dominance. There's never like love making in the butt. There is an absolute, like, I am completely inside your asshole. That's how dominant I am over you. And I don't, it's not important to me to have that. And I don't want the mother of my children being, I could choke her.
But obviously, this is fascinating. We're talking about this. Out of 100 women you could meet who were in a soundproof booth, there's going to be a percentage of them that would say, hey, I like to be dominated.
That's fine.
And then there's going to be a percent that you say, I like doing that if I'm the one who's initiating it. I don't like it if they're initiating it.
That's
and I'm always reminded when we have these conversations about these things that we technically probably shouldn't talk about.
No, that's what the podcast is for. It's the pirate ship, as Carolla says.
Yeah, of the Jennifer Aniston first day on the
Nobody
set.
Knows.
Sorry. Okay. Well, it was the second day. No, what I'm saying is the time when you came from Jerry Maguire right to the set, your first day, you fly all night or whatever, your first day is the kiss. And we've talked about this many times before, but for those of you who haven't heard it, and I'm not going to waste time in it, Jay.
Oh, man, you got new listeners every 20 minutes, man.
Don Martin, homage. So what happens is he gets to the set, and the first scene is the kissing scene, and he asks Tom Cruise for advice. And Tom said, Jay says, should I give her the soap opera kiss? Should I give her the tongue? Oh, should she have the lead? And Tom said specifically, whatever she does, you do. So what
you
I'm
just
saying,
keep matching it like a poker hand. Like,
yeah.
Here's the ante. I raise. I call. I match. Don't ever take it up one notch.
Yeah,
whatever they do, you follow.
So the example I'm giving with your anal sex thing is the fact that when you go on a movie set and you have a love scene or just a kissing scene with an actress, if you do it with 100 actresses, there's going to be a certain percentage that are just going to go for it. And there's going to be ones that are timid. There's going to be ones that whisper in your ear, okay, when we do this one here, go at for me. This one here, I'm going to go after you. There's all kinds of different people. So that's why I don't give it cut and dried with what you're talking about.
About anal sex?
Yes.
I just think it's a lot of it is dominance. And I just don't feel the need at 40 years old to establish like coyote dominance over a fucking human being. That's all.
I got it.
We're good.
All right. This is good. So I want to go back to your thing. So Jay says,
it's
going to
be
there,
trouble. If you don't do my podcast... Week one, opening day, is going to be trouble, close quote.
So in the next 48 hours, you know, I don't try to overly think anything, and I'm going to get
Obviously,
into that as well, too.
My fucking career. 40 movies right into AM radio. I don't like to overly think things through, man, but...
You can do
anything. Remember when you were Gary? I'm Gary Unmarried. I thought maybe we could parlay that into... AM sports talk radio.
And anal sex.
And anal sex in cars with Jennifer Aniston. And Tom Cruise looking on, man.
Undeniable, man.
So I'm talking about overthinking things for myself. But I was the next 48 hours. I'm like, I can't believe it. I mean, I don't. Why would he want me on his podcast? This doesn't make any sense. And I'd never done a podcast before. I'd never done anything like that before. So anyway, we go on, we do it, and it was really natural. It was like a conversation that we've always had, and it was interesting, and we talked. And I found myself talking about the business and how I think artists should approach things. And for whatever reason, and I don't know if even Jay knows the answer, I think that day that it launched, it was the number one podcast in the world.
For a couple months.
And so here it was. I'm this guy who no one even knows who the fuck I am, and now 450,000 people on your coattails, I'm sitting there, and they listen to it, and you're like telling me, oh, it's well received. I'm thinking, oh yeah, he's just saying that to make me feel good or whatever. I hope it goes well. Then I get a call literally 5 days later. Katz, you got to come to the garage again 7 o'clock in 2 more days. I want you to do my third podcast. I'm like Jay.
Nick was on that one too, right?
yeah, yes, he was.
Nick Swanson. Sorry.
I'm like, Jay, I'm not doing the third podcast. This isn't the way it was. But Barry, I'm not talking about this anymore. You're doing the podcast. You are 100%er. I'm like, what the fuck does that mean, 100%er? That means I'm getting all these comments, and it went well. They love what we did together, and then I did the third one, the 10th one, the 21st one.
Still 100%er.
And because of that, and because of the things, I realized that I should do these things in my spare time because of you, and you inspired me to do that as well. And it made me realize that you could reach so many people. And one of the things I want to share that I don't think I've shared on this podcast is that when you're doing a podcast as a manager, which I guess I'm the only manager who does it in my
industry standard, is Barry's podcast. Subscribe to that on iTunes.
Thank you, buddy. 100th episode.
I've not heard an episode.
That's okay. 100th episode is somebody.
Oh, I was on one, though, as you.
You were on one as me, which is probably the most well-received one I've ever had.
That was fucking like the Twilight Zone. It was like
office.
A big gag. I just interviewed you as you the entire time. And then we started talking about the death of your first wife due to anorexia.
That's
and I realized as that was approaching in my brain, I realized this is the most serious thing and the most tragic thing this man's ever gone through. But I've locked myself into just doing the entire podcast as Barry, man. So then I don't think I ever told you this. We were sitting right here. I had to convince myself I was filming a movie. And I was playing an interviewer that speaks that way.
I never knew that.
It wasn't like, ha ha, I'm doing Barry. It was like, I'm in a Cameron Crowe movie, and I'm doing, this is how Jack Parr spoke in the 50s. Man, your wife died of anorexia. That's got to be amazing. How many different ways do you try to save someone? And I just hung, I was acting.
It was.
I've figured out weird ways to act while not acting. Like my wife writes an entire hour of my Showtime special, Happy and a Lot, which I'm thrilled when you told me it was the highest rated stand-up comedy special they've had in 3 years.
It was incredible, and I was actually I want to say this about your wife, who's amazing.
She's got to be on this podcast tomorrow.
I'm going to be honest with you. And her, I was really concerned about that. I wasn't concerned about the material. Great. I was concerned because you were the first comedian in my lifetime of watching comedy specials that had the balls to put up on the screen material written by Nikki Cox. Not written by Jay Moore, not
Cox.
Written by Jay Moore and Nikki Cox. Hey, world, this whole hour of me, a comedian who has generated material for 25 years, I'm admitting that I trusted somebody who I thought was as funny or funnier than me to write this entire thing, and I'm telling the world. I'll tell everybody on this podcast, and maybe I'll lose a lot of friends, and I won't be 100%er. There probably isn't one comedian you know out there that doesn't have somebody write material for them at some point in time, yet you never know. You look at books written by blah, blah. Some of these books are ghostwritten by...
All of them.
All
of them. Yeah.
And I know I've done deals
there
for people.
There are headlining comics. I'm not going to say anybody, but you and I both know such famous comics. A guy like that guys that write for these comics that we're like, think, and you go, holy shit, like how? And that's like their credit. Like if you look a person up, they go, well, he writes for this incredible comic. But it never is like an issue. Nobody goes like, hey, that guy doesn't even write. He's got a team of writers. But you're right. It's amazing. There's like 12, the most famous comics you can think of right now, my dear listener. They have writers.
It's really
not
incredible.
Their whole set. Like my wife wrote 60 minutes.
Yeah.
And then she said, this order, this has to go this way, this at school. But I had to act out. First, I had to act that it was organic coming from within me because I didn't write it. She wrote it. And
acting.
I was acting. So I've carved out these weird ways in my life without acting on shows to like where I have to act like what I did on your podcast, Industry Standard, as you. I was like, okay, I'm just this character. I have to lock it in. But anyway.
And so I was really, really... Concern. Now, this is the thing that's odd, is like when you're working with an artist and you're working with another artist and they're married, try telling somebody how you really feel about something that means something to them tremendously. It's very, very difficult. And so sometimes your instinct tells you, you know what? This person's been acting since they were 9. This person has been in stand-up for a quarter of a century. Even though I've been in the business just as long, sometimes you have to realize, hey, let's just trust the instinct of putting the credit on there. Because ordinarily, it's like being gay as an actor or a comedian and not coming out and just doing... It's like you're keeping it inside and you're not happy and you're not fulfilled, but you're living
Wait,
a lie.
Your concern was the credit? The first credit being written by Nikki Cox?
I'll tell you why.
I thought your concern was, how is this going to go?
No.
You've seen the set.
No.
Well over a dozen
God,
times.
God, I love this. No way.
I had that holstered for well over a year, I would say.
No, my concern was for you as an artist.
How people are going to perceive?
People are going to perceive you as the first artist I've ever known who did a comedy special that admitted... Somebody wrote this, and I didn't. I'm performing this as a comedian and an actor. This person wrote it.
Yeah.
And you had the balls to do that when nobody does that. They do it on television shows because it's accepted. Hey, these are my writers. They won the Emmy.
Plural. Writers.
Writers.
This is my wife, the insomniac. I wake up to pee, and she'll have a spiral notebook, single-spaced, and it'll be like almost 3/4 full, and it's about how much she hates irony, which was the, I think, the standout, really like separate from what everybody else is talking about thing in the special, the whole thing about I have no irony in my body.
The thing for me that stood out as a subset of that was, you know, they say people who are in relationships, they need to love the same things. And your thing, your flip on that, which I had never even remotely heard any semblance of even a fraction of a theme of it is, no, you need to hate together.
Similar hates.
Just like, in 2015, to come up with a bit that you've never even heard even the premise of anybody doing before, not even a germ of it. That's hard. That's hard to do.
Another thing, too, is I really wanted that credit written by Nikki Cox. First of all, she should be in a writer's room someplace.
Absolutely.
The problem is she It's one of the hardest gigs to get because they go, where else have you worked? It's like getting a SAG card. You can't get a SAG card unless you work on movies and television, but you can't work on movies and television unless you have a SAG card.
Now, to me, that's not the issue.
Well, I want it. The issue is she has to write a spec script.
That's not even the issue.
What's the issue?
The issue is, for those of you who don't know about the world of writing, and I'm not saying that I know everything about writing.
You know, more than fucking someone that's about to hear what you're saying right now.
But when you take a writing job, this is the interesting thing about writing, is that you know how minimum wage is in this country? It's $10 an hour, and you work 40 hours a week. You get 400.
Everybody wants a handout, right?
Get 400 after taxes, whatever it is, you know, 327. In the writing world, minimum wage is different for scripted shows like in Everybody Loves Raymond or Modern Family. Late Night is different. But essentially, give or take $500, it's $4,000 a week. That's what you get as a baby writer, your first entrance level the union gives you. But the problem is, it's a salaried position. There's no guidelines really that are upheld of how many hours you work. So, you know, if you had a writer, let's say, and I don't mean to sell him out here, but I think it's important. Keenan Ivory Wayans is always, I think, is a genius. When he did his talk show, he's driven. He's a perfectionist. He wants his writers to work like he worked to get where he is. So you get there at 8 o'clock in the morning. You have to take your lunch in the office, and you're there till midnight.
Yeah, she ain't doing it.
And she's not doing
that. She's a mom.
Yeah.
You're trying to make another one.
That's right. And so on certain sitcoms...
Yeah, but isn't there a show, like let's say she hooks up with KP, our friend, KP mm-hmm. Anderson, and like The Soup. KP Anderson knows her so well and knows how brilliant she is, so... The only thing would be other writers going, how come she comes and goes as she pleases? Yeah. To which KP Anderson, the executive producer of The Soup, could go here, like just takes out all the jokes and goes, this is why.
Yeah, but and that's so... and that could be true. But that's like saying in basketball, when the coach of the Philadelphia 76ers. Yeah, you have to say, OK, well, Allen, look at what Allen does. So he doesn't have to come to practice. Mm-hmm. Yes, he does have to come to practice. He wasn't a great practice player.
So how does she monetize her writing? You know what she should do? I don't know what business... I don't know. There is no business model for this yet. My wife should be the first contracted stand-up special punch-up person. No matter who you are in the world of stand-up comedy. If you're about to do a half hour on Comedy Central or an hour on Showtime... Get in touch with Nicole Avery Cox Moore.
I find that money doesn't work for her. She's best. I think she's amazing when she's just doing out of love and for you.
And it's not
like when there's a check involved, it's like, you know, it's nice to make money, but it's like she cares about you.
The greatest thing for me is when we did Master Debaters. And why that show didn't come back is I have no idea why, because it was so easy and it's so easily fixed.
I know why.
Why?
Guests.
Well, that's how.
I know, but a lot of people that you had on, the chemistry wasn't right, and you're a great actor, but you can feel it. And I'm thinking.
I had an IFB.
I was wondering if it was just me, and so I was just observing.
Oh, no,
and then you came off, and then you came, Burns. Then you came off stage, and you're like, Jesus, this guy. And
I the only reason I didn't fight Eric Burns, formerly the Oakland A's, who I'm now still friends with, so everything's okay. But at the time, he made me such fits. Is the only reason I didn't fight Eric Burns is because he would have kicked the shit out of me. He's a fucking crazy-ass athlete. But if that guy was, like, just some double A... If I wasn't certain he would have whooped my ass in front of others, I would have fucking taken a swipe at him. He made me that crazy.
But I just felt like in that...
Real quick. In that show, I wore an IFB, where, to the listener, if you don't know, it's a little earpiece you wear in your ear, and nobody sees it. It's the size of a... smaller than a peanut. You put that in your ear... My wife's in a control room, and as the show is happening live, she's like, say Hattie McDowell. Just say the word Hattie McDowell. And I would just go, Hattie McDowell? Fucking huge. I don't even know what it means. Huge laughs. So now moving forward, I was talking to Melissa Rivers, and she seriously asked me if I would ever consider being on Fashion Police. And I was like, are you out of your mind? I was, fuck yes, of course. But I would have Nick in the back, and I would wear an IFB, and I would just have them make the checks out to her, and then I would reap the rewards of having, like, you know, 15 gay people that ordinarily wouldn't see me for the rest of my life at every stand-up show.
That's the reason why you do it?
Well, I would do it because I would love to. I love Melissa, like, as a friend, and
that's,
I like the
that's
show.
Odd that I
my
think...
wife is so tuned into fashion that it would freak people out. Me saying her intelligent shit with her behind the curtain, it would blow people's minds of me going, well, you know, the Olsen twins with the row, but, you know, you really need that Jane Birkin style of baggy on top. People would be like, what? This is the sports guy?
And I think if you did it that way, I think it'd be wonderful. But fashion police indicates negativity.
No, but that's why I would be the positive person and let everybody else throw shit around. I would separate myself that way.
And I didn't know that because in the special, what you talk about with your those of you who haven't watched the special, you have to watch
my
it.
My special?
Yes.
How dare you not watch it, Happy and a Lot.
So
it'll be on Netflix in 6 years, ladies and gentlemen.
So what happens is in the show,
I'd not be on Netflix before I die.
Yes, your last one's on Netflix.
Yeah, but what about this one?
Of course, it'd be
before I
year.
Die, I'll grow to be about 90. Go on.
Anyway, so in your special, you talk about how you and your wife, you know, shit on people between yourselves.
Similar hates.
Yeah, so no. That's why naturally I assumed that on the other thing.
So your concern was that written by Nikki Cox, were you concerned that people were going to think less of the special? Think less of me?
There were there was one positive and two negatives.
Barry's holding up four fingers. Swear to God, on my life.
Well, my
Barry
pinky
Katz
can't
went.
Control itself.
Barry held up four fingers and said there was one positive and there was one negative. And he held up four fingers.
I feel like Ricky Henderson. Anyways.
Okay, Ricky, you are still the best.
So
know
the
that story?
Point, no.
Nomar was on deck. Ricky was hitting lead off. And we'll get right back to it, I promise. I'll listen to these commercials.
We love hearing from you, so keep on sending your tweets and comments. I read every single one of them, and don't miss the chance to take a very important listener survey at podcastone.com. Your responses are going to help me make this show the very best it can be. It's only going to take you like 3 minutes out of your life. Don't you have 3 minutes, and you're going to get the instant gratification that comes with knowing that you helped me out. You can tell me how you really feel about the show. And help me get to know you better. Do it now. If you feel like it, take the survey at podcastone.com, podcastone.com, and keep those tweets and comments coming. I do read them, and thank you.
2 days ago, Jeff McDonald posted the following. Just watched the sunrise from above the clouds. So stoked. Jeff got 19 likes and 7 comments. Not bad, Jeff. Geico has a comment to add that may make you even more stoked. In just 15 minutes, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance by switching to Geico. And if that doesn't put your head above the clouds, you'll have the extra money to scale a peak that will. Hashtag on cloud 9, hashtag savings.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Ricky Henderson's batting leadoff for the Red Sox. Nomar's hitting second. Ricky leads off the game, striking out looking. And as Nomar's walking to the batter's box and home plate, now batting number 5, Ricky Henderson's going in the other direction with his head down. And as he walked past him, Ricky Henderson goes, "It's okay, Ricky, you are still the best." I'm 40 years old. I fucking love him. All right, so your two concerns. One
positive, two negatives.
Oh, okay. So we're getting closer to the fourth finger.
Yeah. The one negative was perception. People out in the world, oh, he doesn't write his own material. How do I know the shit that we were loving before he never wrote, and he's just a guy who's just a Bob Hope. He just stands up there and other people write the shit, and he's just really an actor. He's a phony.
Okay.
Number two, perception with the comedians. You know, would you garner respect from them knowing that somebody else wrote your special? The number one positive for Nikki Cox, proving herself as an extraordinary writer and that she can do anything, and everybody who watches it finally sees a credit on something, that it's like she does it and she does it extraordinarily well.
She was with another comedian before me. I'm not going to say who, but she wrote...
Did she write the screaming?
Gargantuan amounts of material for that person. Don't... So, I just thought it was high time. And all the jokes on Gary O'Malley that she never got credit for, all the NASCAR awards, all the NHL awards, all the jokes that she wrote, all the things on my radio show, all the things she put my Real Housewives of New Jersey blogs that she would give me jokes for that. I thought it was appropriate. And also, to completely, if you really want to go behind the fucking curtain in my brain.
That's how we always do it.
That's why these are always the best episodes. I have been accused in the past of stealing material.
I just did 100.
Joe Rogan said, I steal material on his podcast. He said, that's stealing. He said it to Bert. You know this. How do I steal something my wife wrote? That was my big middle finger to every comic that has ever spoken about me and material. And he steals, and he's there. My fucking wife wrote it. So even if there's a similar bit down the line, which oddly there can't be, because my wife writes at a much higher frequency than most comics that you and I know. She's so intelligent, way more intelligent than me. So I reap the benefits also of being perceived as being smarter than I actually am, just because I can use words like incongruent in the middle of a run-on sentence that I never would have thought of, but that's what she wrote. So it's like, really? He steals material? His wife wrote his act. How did he steal that? What are you talking about? How do you steal Harvey Keitel so I have the impressions and I have the other stuff? So there was also a whole, my wife and I had spoken, you know, pillow talk, of just like, nobody can ever fucking accuse you of stealing again because your wife wrote the special.
Well, the sad part about our world is that that's not true.
As Kevin Meaney once said, it's filled with cocks and cunts. You're all cocks and cunts.
Yeah, and so, but now...
You wanted in up top.
Yeah, I have...
You said you want to talk about adversity.
I do. And so this leads into adversity because of the things that you've gone through. How much time do we have?
20 minutes.
Okay, so this is going to be...
Let's hope Greg Toohey's writing a hell of a monologue right now.
So this week...
What's your Twitter handle?
At Barry Katz.
Okay. Well, was it different for a while?
Yeah.
Don't say the old one. Mm-hmm. At Barry Katz, at JMore37.
The industry standard. I got my 100th episode with Judd Apatow, which you've done.
Judd's a good guy, man.
Yeah. Who also...
Did you already record it?
Yes. Who also...
I want to tell him I'm available. What kind of manager are you?
We did talk about it.
Really?
Yeah. Subscribe. Not on the podcast.
Industry standard, everybody. Great podcast.
We talked about that, which was just a precursor to this. I said, how do you run into people who you don't hire? Like, how do you do it? Like, what happens? Like, don't you feel uncomfortable? He says, well, I don't really, you know, because I'm just trying to do the best I can. And he said, I was at the Cellar, and I think he said Dice came in. I don't know if he bumped him or whatever, but Dice came in and went on before him. He said he performed the Comedy Cellar like it was Madison Square Garden right before him. And, like, he did everything. He killed. And... then Judd was introduced, and if you're familiar with the Comedy Cellar, there's this doorway with there's a light up top that shines on the person. The doorway is literally, I swear to you, maybe 25 feet away from the guy on the stage.
No, yeah, maybe.
And he said during his whole set, Dice was there in the doorway just staring him down, just stirring his drink, sipping, staring him down.
All right. Didn't you see what I could do? Listen to Katz talk about adversity now, right? Remember we were in France that time? They called you the big Jew in French, right? That's adversity.
But one of the things...
University.
But one of the things that is not common knowledge about Judd, which we talked about, and he was so fantastic about it, was that Judd stole... Judd had been friends with Fred Wolf, and early on in his career, he did a bit. Fred Wolf, one of the funny, did a bit that was a Fred Wolf bit, and for many years denied it, and then finally came clean with Fred. And so, there's a lot of people out there who've had situations where they've done things that maybe you don't think that they've done. It doesn't make them a bad person. You know, the greatest comedians in the world have heard a bit somewhere and done it, just like Judd or you. You don't know
me
if you're
specifically. I'll do a very quick complete mea culpa of exactly what happened. Bert Kreischer, because a lot of people are like, unless you talk, they like, they don't. Bert Kreischer was opening for me. Bert Kreischer had a great Tracy Morgan story. I told Bert Kreischer, you have to tell that story on stage. Bert said, I can't do the voice, and I'll look like an idiot unless I do the voice. And I go, you won't. Just tell it straight. You don't have to do the Tracy voice. Bert said to me, on my son's eyes, Dan Godfrey, who was running the Irvine Improv at the time, was on one side of me. My wife was on the other side of me. Bert was next to Dan Godfrey. He said, you tell the story. Could you do Tracy Morgan impression? That night, I do the Tracy Morgan story like 5 minutes in. Second show.
Bert and you says, gave credit to Bert. You said I was talking to
that's
my
how you
Bert.
Get out of getting out of the check. I go, Bert's got the best Tracy Morgan story. Mm-hmm. Bert's got the best Tracy. That's how you get out of paying for the check, Bert. It's a great story. One of the all-time greatest stories. And Bert Kreischer is one of the all-time greatest storytellers.
Absolutely.
And I miss Bert. I miss you, Bert. I miss him, and I love him. But what are you going to do? So Bert kept saying to me, do it. And we were together for a year and a half. I don't want to exaggerate at all, because everyone's going to fucking nitpick this shit. So I'm going to get it right. Year and a half. Do it. With his blessing. Then, when I did shows without Bert, I told the story. That's okay. Somewhere in there, ego, narcissism, I told the story as it happened to me. I was in a club with Tracy Morgan. That's how you get out of paying for the check, Jay Moores. Place goes fucking ape shit.
This is what I love about our conversation.
This is very
because you go deep again.
This is very intoxicating, right? I tell my wife, or she's at one of my sets, and she says, "You can't tell that story like it happened to you. It happened to Bert, and you shouldn't be telling it at all, because there's way more important things for you to talk about than, hey, this neat thing happened to a guy that you may or may not know." Like, you have many Tracy stuff that you could tell on your own. Like,
absolutely.
I'm not going to fuck with you, Jay Moores. You legendary. You joked out the big man on the 17th floor. So I stopped doing it. Bert was on my... So, yes, I took that story, and then outside of Bert, I changed it for a few months that it had happened to me. But it was about a year and a half of Bert saying, do it. Do it. Will you do it tonight? My friends are here. Will you do it in front of my friends? So I was like kind of spoon-fed, and it was a little bit of a mind fuck on my end. I was sort of getting mind, like, okay. And I'm getting all the applause for his thing. And then when I was sort of released into the wild, I just told the story like it happened to me. Realized, this is horrible. Put the brakes on that shit. Come back. Don't even tell the story anymore. Bert comes on my podcast and says, and I quote, anybody that thinks you steal is fucking retarded. That's what he said on a Saturday in my garage. 4 hours later, he goes to the Joe Rogan podcast, and Joe says, let's talk about Jay Moore and the Tracy Morgan story. And Bert goes, you know, the sad thing is it's one of those stories I just never really wanted told. I just wanted to be one of those great green room stories you share with your friends, And then Joe just jumps in and goes, but that's stealing, because that didn't happen to him. That happened to you. And Bert did not say, yeah, but I told him to do it.
And I am going to.
Bert just aired me out and never said, no, Joe, you don't understand. I told Jay to tell that story for well over a year. Bert just remained quiet. And then for the next, still to this day, I get 10 tweets a day. You fucking thief, hashtag Death Squad, which is Rogan's fans. Like, I got more ears.
And I want to say something that's going to be odd, because we really do go deep on these things. And this is going to be hard for you to believe. I actually am going to share with everybody why Bert Kreischer is a guy who has been put in the middle here. And because what happens is when you're a comic coming up and you're looking up at the Twin Towers... Jay Moore, the light, Joe Rogan, the unbelievable edginess of darkness, and they're both sitting at the top of the mountain, and you're in front of one, and you're sitting there, and he's saying, hey, listen, I want you to do that. Because he might not feel like he wants you to do it, but you're Jay Moore, and you've done so much for him, and he wants to be like, hey, I'm not going to do the bit. This is the least I can do, but I do feel a little tinge in my stomach for doing this, but I'm doing it, and it's a good thing. Then you get on Joe Rogan, and your hero who's on the top of the other mountain says, that's stealing, right? And you don't want to back down to Joe Rogan because you know how much he means to you. And so you're caught in the middle, and all of a sudden the swirl of things. But as we found out from the New York Post when we lived there, or the Daily News, the headline of Jacko is Wacko sells more newspapers than the headline in the New York Times. Michael Jackson has a setback. He's buying the bones of the Elephant Man. Which paper sells more? And so that's what happened to you.
I know, but I'm amazed over 2 years. I've reached out. I've called. I saw him at LAX, and we hugged. And I told him, I love you. He goes, I love you too.
He feels uncomfortable because he knows that the way things were handled was damaging.
All right.
So he probably can't face that aspect of things, and he has to make a choice.
And I would love to go on Joe's podcast for the record. Because this frequently asked FAQs on every website, most frequently asked question, why don't you do Rogan's podcast? I would love to do Joe's podcast. First of all, foremost, because I would like to apologize to Red Band, his producer, because I got so many Death Squad tweets calling me Mencia Moore, you fucking hack, you're a piece of shit, we're going to come fuck you up. And I blocked thousands of people on Twitter because it was nonstop. But that hashtag Death Squad in my mind is synonymous with Red Band, Rogan's producer. So then I lashed out at Red Band, calling him a fucking piece of shit and he's fucking sucks. And I wanted to go on Rogan's podcast. I was invited 3 times, and all 3 times they pulled the football away like Lucy and Charlie Brown. And I don't think they fully understand. I was going there to look at Brian in the eye and go, I owe you an apology, because I had displaced anger and aggression for strangers on the internet, and then you became the target. Because I can't tell 1,000 people, you know what, go fuck yourself. It'll take too long. So I went, fuck Brian. Fuck Red Band. So I owe you an apology. Straight up. And you know me.
Yeah.
If I'm telling you this, you know that's the goddamn truth. This ain't damage control. You know, and I've told you this many years ago.
Absolutely.
And then I was going to say to Joe, you did say that I steal. And you are, for better or for worse, you are the top of the goddamn totem pole. You're Joe fucking Rogan. You are the leader. You're in charge. You're if this was Lord of the Flies, we eat when you fucking say we eat. You're the guy. I'm not up there with you, Joe. I understand that. I'm well fucking below Joe in the pecking order of comics and the sway they have over others. Well below Joe. But I was going to tell Joe, but you did say I steal. And you know more than anyone, Joe. That is the longest shadow to get out from behind. I still get fucking tweets about that shit. Local. And I was never going to raise my voice like a politician. Like, no, you don't point. Like, I was just, I owe you an apology. That was a little fucked up, Joe. You know me better than that. You know I write a tremendous amount. And then my wife and then the thing and the thing. That's why I wanted to go on.
But that's a lesson to everybody, is like, when you're feeling angry, get away from your devices.
Oh, it's true.
Just wait. You know how Chris Rock in the movie Top 5, he has the line, he says, listen, guys, never make an important decision after a blowjob. Wait 72 hours. Well, it's the same thing about, it's one of my favorite lines, and it's the same thing about decisions regarding anger and rage. I did a whole podcast about calm. No one ever got hurt with calm. Calm is important. So if something's happening,
Gandhi's wife, she died of a hunger strike.
That's true. You can't affect.
She was real calm.
That's right. You can't affect Joe Rogan in any way, because Joe Rogan is
Have you ever heard me say a negative thing about Joe Rogan?
Never.
No.
And I, you know, I've been working with you for 25 years.
Joe is tremendous.
So, but the thing is like, I don't, you know, I I have to acknowledge, and everybody acknowledges, it's like rock and roll or anything, you know, or any music. You know, there's going to be people who love Barry Manilow, and there's going to be people who love Nine Inch Nails, and
I love
people
both.
Love Imagine Dragons and whatever. And Joe Rogan might be somebody's cup of tea, or they might not be. I've always, it's weird, like, the only kind of dark comedy that I really, really have responded to in my career or my life as a personal viewer is probably Bill Hicks and Jim Jefferies. Those kind of dark comedy where it goes so extremely to the other side. It's
and
ridiculous.
More like performance pieces, too.
Yeah.
It wasn't even like stand-up.
But Jim Jefferies does the whole, you know, Oscar, I can't pronounce the last name, the death of the...
Pistorius.
Yeah. 15 minutes reenacting the death. But the point is that I tend to like, if I like darkness, I like it way, way over. Joe has this edge that's so fantastic and the material's so strong, kills so hard. But I tend, as a comedy audience viewer, I, for some reason, you know, I would probably choose the way over the line versus the guy
right.
who's... But that doesn't mean I don't think he's tremendous and respect him. And I only probably have 10 minutes left and I want to talk about what I wanted to talk about before, which is the adversity, which we've talked about that. So myself personally, what happened this week to me was awful because... I was in there with your dogs in the radio station the other day, and you were talking about something, why you don't let your dogs out or whatever. And I just, one of my son's dogs was killed by a coyote two
very
nights ago.
Los Angeles problem.
And
like nobody in Texas is going.
I have a fenced-in yard.
Oh, really?
And I don't know what happened. But went out to go to the bathroom, ran to the fence. Every dog in the neighborhood crazy. Killed. And but I want to share this is that I had more respect for you for a specific reason I'm going to tell you about.
You're getting emotional.
I'm getting very emotional because I was teaching a comedy class. That's why I'm here today. I taught teach a comedy class for about 100 kids in my son's school, and the final comedy classes were on Monday and Tuesday. The dog was killed on Sunday night. So I had them stay over their mom's place, and I waited two days before I could tell them, and I had to tell them that their dog was killed. And the
they did not notice that the dog's not in the house.
No, because I had
them
stay
at
their mom's.
Sorry.
So the anxiety that I felt in my stomach for those 2 days, knowing what was going to happen, how I had to tell them, and because you're dealing with kids 10 years old, they don't understand. You know, it's like they understand, but they haven't been taught how to deal with adversity. And so I'm just going to go on with the story. So I go and I take them to a park with their mom, and I tell them, and I start crying really hard as I'm telling them.
I've never seen you cry.
And I'm going to share something. My mom passed away 4 months ago. My mom always joked, when I die, you're not going to cry. And I hadn't cried for 5 months after my mom died. My mom, the most important person in my life, in terms of my personal life. But I hadn't cried. Hadn't cried a month later, a week later, 2 months later.
I remember you confiding this in me.
Yeah.
And you asked me, what's wrong with me?
That's right. And so here an event happens where I'm faced with my children. And I tell them, and I'm crying, and I found out that adversity that I was facing, I wondered if I was handling it right because I was showing my emotion. And something unbelievable happened. They both came to me when they were crying and hugged me, and they said, Daddy, please stop crying. It's not your fault. Don't blame yourself. It happens, Daddy. And so that moment, I had so much anxiety about these little 10-year-old souls. They took a tough situation, they reversed it, and they came to me.
They became the parent.
They became the parent. And then I came back to being a parent, and I told this story about adversity, and I'm going to share it with you, with the stealing, with anybody out there that's listening who goes through something that doesn't really understand why they go through it.
But I think you crying about the dog with your kids was all the pent-up stuff with your mom, obviously, right?
You're totally right.
Okay.
It took an event to get everything out.
You needed a trigger.
And so as I calmed down and became sort of like more of a parent with them, and I was talking to them, something channeled through me, and I thought about the adversity, and I thought about the anxiety you used to feel at Saturday Night Live. And I think of the anxiety that people have who are suffering from mental illness or anxiety disorders. I felt this for 2 days. I was paralyzed. There's people out there that are feeling this every day, or on Saturday Night Live, every day of work. And I never fully understood what you went through, because when you said I'm have anxiety, I
no panic
or whatever it was that relating to that and anxiety.
It's like waking up and your ceiling is weighted, and at any moment of your day, your ceiling's going to fall on top of you. From the moment you open your eyes, not if, when, and I think when you go outside, when you go to a restaurant, subway, bus, car, shower. I remember my biggest panic attack. I was showering, and I looked at a fucking towel on a rack, and it was like a purple towel, and I'm like, that towel's purple. In my mind, like, it was so inconsequential, where I got on my hands and knees, and I was vomiting the panic. It's insane what triggers it.
And that's why I was thinking about you so strongly, because I thought to myself, I have so much respect for Jay and what he went through. I have so much respect for all the people out there going through, because 2 days, and I was ready to buy a handgun. And to think that somebody goes through their whole life or a whole working experience to try to figure out how to stop it. And so I'm in front of my kids and they're crying, and I say, listen, I want to tell you something. I want to tell you a story that I think will help you understand when these things happen, when bad things happen. I said, look, and you alluded to it earlier in the podcast, I said, about 25 years ago, as you know, I was married before Mommy. She was 23 years old. I was 25. She died after 8 months. I didn't know she was going to die. It just happened, just like your dog. You don't know when it's going to happen. You're saying hello to the person, goodbye to the person. You're hugging them. You go off and do what you do, and then you come back, and it's over. And I said, I spent a lot of time mourning. I spent a lot of time grieving. I spent a lot of time crying. I spent a lot of time in bed. And I didn't understand why this happened to me. I didn't understand what it was, the purpose.
You're saying this to 10-year-olds.
10-year-olds. I said, I looked up into the heavens, whoever I believed in, and said, why? Why did you do this to her? Why did you do this to me? What is the reason for this? And today I said, you're looking at this about your dog saying, why? Why did this happen? And I'm going to tell you why. Because I said, right now, about 25 years later, I'm staring into the eyes of my children who wouldn't be here if my 23-year-old wife hadn't been taken from this world. The world has a plan, and you're going to figure out what the reason is, not now, but later. And you'll understand why you went through the adversity. You'll understand why you went through the things with Bert and Joe Rogan and some of these people. A lot of you out there who are listening to the podcast will understand why you lost somebody, or why you got fired from a job, or why something bad happened. It's not evident now, but it will be evident later. And for me, I told them, I'm looking in your eyes, and I wouldn't be here with you. I wouldn't have the life I have. I wouldn't have the love I have between you if the world hadn't taken her. And it's a horrible thing, but it happened. And I'm sure she's looking down right now saying, I'm so happy and grateful that you have a beautiful life. And that's what I wanted to tell you today.
The only way out is through, is what I've learned. And there's a Bukowski book of poetry on my bookshelf, and the poetry is terrible. It's not one of his finer works, but the title is What Matters Most Is How Well You Walk Through the Fire. And the only reason I still have that book of poetry, there's great poetry in my house, Anne Sexton and Margaret Atwood, and of course, E.E. Cummings. No one, not even the rain, has such small hands. My love, if I ever meet the man that broke your heart, I shall shake his hand. But I always kept that Bukowski book because of what it said on the title, on the front page. What matters most is how well you walk through the fire. So I don't believe everything happens for a reason. But I do know that everything happens. And what matters most is how well you walk through the fire and how you deal with it. And I think that's how we're ultimately judged, whether by God, by Christ, by our children, by our peers. What do you do? Aunt Christie dies in an apartment fire. Why? So Uncle Dan could live. What if Aunt Christie was special and a burn victim? That would be hell on earth for everybody. I'm glad you're here. And there's so many people that email me at jmoore.com, and they share such incredibly intimate and personal things that they're going through. And they say specifically, I listen to your podcast. It helps me. It's a break. It's a mini vacation. So to all those, I answer all of them. And can they email you?
Absolutely.
Where?
They can email me at bketeam@barrycats.com. bketeam@barrycats.com.
Like a team?
Yeah, and it gets to me.
BKETeam. Completely different website. I love you, brother.
I love you, too. This is very, very emotional, as always, and really wonderful. And I just love doing these. I don't know what it is. I could sit here all day and
I know,
do
me
these.
Too. I'm going to say this to you, and I'm going to say this to the listeners and for all the Twitter trolls. I am never mentioning what we spoke about again. Ever. I will never, ever. I have to close the book and put it away because I will never have resolution. I will never answer a troll. I won't even block them.
Now, for all of you listening, I'm shaking Jay's hand and I'm making him look me in the eye.
I will never speak on that topic again.
I'm going to hold you to that, and you're going to hold yourself to that.
I think you know me second most of anyone in my life. It's my wife, you, and my parents are like 10th.
We're still holding hands and looking each other in the eye, and I believe
him. I will never
him.
Speak of it again. There's no reason to. We've spoken about it a dozen times. I'm putting it away.
Very happy about that.
Me too. My special, Happy and a Lot, written by Nikki Cox. And any comic out there that wants some punch up, get some money on the table, get my wife. Email me, reach out. We'll hook you up. You want your special taken up a notch? You want to go from a B+ to an A?
jmoreteam@jmoore.com. No, I'm kidding.
Nikki Cox. All right. jmoore.com for all your needs. T-shirts, all that stuff. And
bketeam@barrycats.com.
All right, buddy. I love you.
I love you, too. Thank
Put
you.
Put your name on it. All right, buddy.
Yeah. happening.